Good afternoon. We're going to call the Senate State Affairs Committee meeting to order. It's approximately 3:31 on January 31st, and that's Tuesday. Let the record show that we have a quorum to do business. We have Senator Egan, Senator Wilson, Senator Diesel, and myself, Senator Dunleavy. Senator Coghill will be here shortly in about 15 minutes. The purpose of our meeting today is to hear SB 5, Political Contributions Limit, Prohibition, Prime Sponsor, Senator Meyer. And then SB 1, Appropriation, 2016 PFD Supplemental Payment, Prime Sponsor, Senator Dunleavy. SB 2, 2016 PFD Supplemental Payment, Prime Sponsor, Senator Dunleavy. So with that, we're going to begin with SB 5, Political Contribution Limit, Prohibition. Senator Meyer is the Prime Sponsor, once again, for SB 5. And we have before us a committee substitute for SB 5. Is there a motion to move?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 5, Work Order LS0112/O, before committee.
Thank you. Now I'll object for discussion. Could we have Senator Meyer and or his staff come forward to explain the changes in the CS for SB 5? Please identify yourselves for the record, and then you can begin your testimony explaining the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Kevin Meyer. I represent Senate District M, which is the southeast part of Anchorage. My intent on bringing forward SB 5, and my staff, Edward, will explain the changes in the CS from the original bill. Changes are fairly minor. So, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'll just explain the bill in general at this point in time and the reason why I'm bringing forward Senate Bill 5. And the intent is to eliminate the appearance of any undue influence or corruption, and more importantly, the appearance of any corruption within our campaign finance system. We must do everything we can, Mr. Chairman, to maintain and keep the trust, the public's trust. We are here to represent our constituents, and we need our constituents to believe that we are here for that purpose and no other purpose. In response to the public's concern about actual and apparent corruption in Alaska politics in 1996, the legislature passed sweeping campaign finance reform laws. And one of the purposes was to limit soft money contributions from lobbyists and special interest groups and to control the influence of these contributions on our political actions, including elections. The 1996 Act included the following statement. It is the purpose of this Act to substantially revise Alaska's campaign finance laws in order to restore the public's trust in the electoral process and to foster good government. Lobbyist contributions to candidates were limited to only those candidates from the district in which the lobbyist is eligible to vote. This was to allow individuals to exercise their First Amendment right to support a political candidate within their voting district, but not to influence other elections throughout the state on behalf of their clients or their special interest groups that lobbyists represent. What was not contemplated in 1996 campaign finance reforms were the contributions by lobbyists to political action groups that are controlled by a legislator or a candidate for state legislature. So this bill aims to kind of fill that loophole that was not seen back in 1996. Under our current statutes, lobbyists can contribute to groups that are controlled by legislators or legislative candidates from districts other than their own, who can then contribute to other candidates, potentially influencing the outcome of elections across the state or official actions taken in the legislature. For example, a lobbyist can potentially influence decisions by a sitting legislator on which bills will be heard in a committee, scheduled for a floor vote, or even how the legislator votes on a particular bill. While we hope elected officials act with the highest integrity 100% of the time, even the appearance of this type of influence is unacceptable. So Senate Bill 5 will close the loophole that allows lobbyists to contribute to political action groups that are controlled by a legislator or a candidate for the legislature and places a restriction on when these groups can engage in political fundraising. similar to other candidates' campaigns fundraising activity, which is limited for these groups. It can only occur when a legislature is not in session. So, Mr. Chairman, I know it's kind of confusing, but what we're trying to do is just raising money for PACs similar to what it is for candidates running for office. So, in other words, we can't take any money, of course, while we're in session, nor do we want to, or special session. And also, we're not allowed to take money ever from lobbyists unless they live in our district. So basically, this bill is trying to mirror the current law that we have for us, for political candidates. So with that, Mr. Chairman, be happy to answer any questions, or if you want my staff to go into the changes in the CS, we could do that as well.
With the permission of the committee, if we would just have Senator Meyer's staff explain the CS, then we can come back and ask questions.
Certainly. For the record, Edra Morledge, staff to Senator Meyer. I have a very short sectional summary of the bill. It essentially does three things, like Senator Meyer said. It prohibits soliciting or accepting contributions. It prohibits making expenditures or contributions all during a legislative session by groups that are controlled by a legislator or a candidate for the state legislature. And it also limits the ability of lobbyists to contribute to those groups as well across the board at no time. So in the sectional summary, I will I'll just go through that real quickly. Section 1 places a restriction on the solicitation or acceptance of contributions. The original draft had also the restriction on making contributions in this section, and it was placed in the wrong section of statute. So that's the purpose for having the CS before you today. Section 2 discusses the prohibited contributions. So it prohibits lobbyist contributions to candidates for the state legislature or a group that is controlled by a sitting legislator or a candidate for the legislature. Section 3 adds a new section to the prohibited contributions section, and this makes puts back into the statute the exception for lobbyists to make contributions to candidates from their own voting district. So that's maintained from our existing law today. Section 4 places the limitation on expenditures. This is the part that was broken out in the new CS. This disallows expenditures by these groups during a legislative session. And Section 5 is the definition section. And in the new CS, there was a slight change just in the lead-in to that paragraph. So what it says now is, unless the context clearly requires otherwise, these definitions apply in this chapter. And that was a drafting convention to ensure that there was no legal ambiguity in interpreting these definitions in any other sections. So as Senator Meyer said, our campaign finance laws are extremely complicated. So I asked for the Alaska Public Offices Commission to be online if you had any specific questions for them, and then if you have any drafting questions regarding our CS or the original bill or other legal questions, our drafter should be online as well.
So we just throw the CS, and I'm going to remove my objection to the CS. Is there any objection, further objection? Seeing none, we will adopt the CS. Are there questions for Senator Meyer or staff? I have a question. So I just want to make sure that what I've heard is correct. This will prohibit lobbyists from donating. They're not really donating to the individual. They're donating to their PAC, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Because they cannot donate to individuals now.
That's correct.
But right now they can donate to a PAC that is controlled by an individual.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
This would prohibit that from happening.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
It would also prohibit the PAC from raising funds during the session.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
But after the session, a PAC can raise funds.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And this would be a PAC that's controlled by a legislator could raise funds after the session.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, but if I understand correctly, not from any lobbyists, whether you're right. In session or not in session.
So it doesn't prohibit a legislator from having a PAC that can raise money after or before a session. It just clarifies that that PAC cannot receive any money from a lobbyist and cannot be raised, that PAC cannot be raising money during the session.
That's correct.
Okay. Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, based on what you just said, I'm looking at Section 3, and it actually sounds like the individual who's a lobbyist can't contribute unless they live in the district in which the individual is eligible to vote. Could you clarify Section 3? Who can they contribute to? You know, right now, as an individual, a legislator cannot accept a contribution from a lobbyist who does not live in their district. Does that same prohibition apply to the legislator's PAC?
Chairman, if I can have Edra.
Please.
For the record, Edra Moreledge again. Excuse me. Section 3 in the CS is actually the same language that we currently have in law right now, which is what allows the lobbyist to contribute to a legislator. So we're not removing that ability. But the Section 2 above it is what prohibits the contribution to a group that is controlled by a legislator or a candidate. So this Section 3 is in here because it had to be repealed for drafting purposes. It had to be repealed and put back in.
Thank you.
Does that answer your question, Senator?
I think so. Thank you.
Senator Wilson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess a follow-up to that, to get a little bit more clarification, so thus it would be the registered address of the PAC would be the address of what that district is for the contributing member if they were a lobbyist. Or if it's a group, and if it's co-chaired, or if it has a sort of a group entity, then that address could be a P.O. box or a...
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to let Edra answer that as well, and... Actually, that's something that has bothered me somewhat, too. This wouldn't prohibit your spouse, for example, to have a PAC and that she could control and she could get money from lobbyists. We just can't prohibit also. You know, as much as I'd like to actually, it was a chairman that suggested that we should just allow... Or maybe I shouldn't say this is from you, Mr. Chairman, but it's come up before that we should just allow contributions from anybody and everybody as long as they're fully disclosed, because no matter how many laws that we put in place and no matter how hard we try, there's people that's always going to figure out loopholes. But we're just trying to tighten it up so that it mirrors our current policy for us as candidates. So to more specifically, Mr. Chairman, Edra will answer. Senator Wilson's question.
Please.
For the record, Edra Moreledge again. If you look on the CS on page 5, beginning on line 24, is the definition of group. And then carrying over into the next page, it does define when a group is considered to be controlled by a candidate. So it's not in statute that it's by an address or where they registered or where that candidate lives. It's if there's several different descriptions in here, but for instance, a group whose major purpose is to further the nomination, election, or candidacy of only one individual or intends to expend more than 50% of its money on a single candidate shall be considered to be controlled by that candidate. There are a couple of other thresholds in there that also dictate what a group is that's controlled by a candidate, and that's in the current definition we already have. That's not
follow-up, Senator?
No.
Okay. So, question: if a legislator has a PAC, but the primary purpose of that PAC is informational only, not to support candidates, well, how does this bill impact that concept, if at all? Does this bill prohibit that concept?
Well, Mr. Chairman, again, I'll have Edra answer that, but it would be the same in the sense that you know the legislator who has his PAC would not be able to accept funds during legislative session and would not be able to accept funds from a lobbyist, even though the intent or the purpose is for information purposes.
So the intention, the purpose of the PAC is not going to have anything to do with whether they can raise money or not?
That's correct.
So if it's a PAC controlled by a legislator, or if a legislator is part of a group that controls the PAC, those prohibitions would be in place?
Mr. Chairman, you may be getting in an area where we need help from APOC, but Edra, do you have an idea?
Yes, for the record, Edra Morledge. I would refer back to the definition of a group. Unless that legislator is considered to be in control of the group, it wouldn't prohibit their activity within a PAC. Yeah.
Okay. Questions from members of the committee? Because, once again, we'll be laying the bill aside so folks can think about it, come up with questions, listen to the constituents, and so forth, and we'll schedule the bill for another hearing. But are there any additional questions at this point for Senator Meyer and his staff regarding this bill? So I think with that, we'll lay it to the side, and then we will pick it up at a later date, and that way, if there's questions, we can get those questions answered.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. We're going to have a brief of these. Okay, we're back back in session. We're out of recess. We're now going to be moving on to SB 1, which is a PFD supplemental payment. On Saturday, we took public testimony in SB 1 from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., and I want to thank all of those who participated. At this point, I'll close testimony, public testimony on SB 1, and I would like to is there a motion to move SB 1?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee move the committee substitute for Senate Bill Number 1, version Delta, with individual recommendations and to the next committee of referral. Okay.
Are there any objections to move SB 1? Okay. Seeing none, SB 1 is moved, and we're going to take a brief at ease for the documents. Thank you. We're back in out of recess. This is the Senate State Affairs Committee. We are now moving to SB 2, which has to do with the PFD supplemental payoff. Public testimony is still open. Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this issue? Mr. Burnett, you've signed up for SB 2. Please come forward, state your name for the record, who you're with, and begin your testimony, please.
For the record, Jerry Burnett. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at the Alaska Department of Revenue. A couple of things. One, I wanted to testify on the fiscal note and to make it clear that the fiscal note attached to this bill from the Department of Revenue indicates an operating cost in the Department of Revenue primarily for mail and a little for $279,000. The amount of the dividend in the fiscal note is $1,030 that we use to calculate that. With SB 1, with the amount, the actual amount of the dividend would be adjusted to the total appropriation. So I just, well, the fiscal note indicates a dividend of a certain amount. That dividend would be actually larger under the funding than that $1,030. There were two issues, though, that I wanted to bring before the committee that are not addressed in the bill or in our fiscal note. I had a call from Health and Social Services today. They have Hold Harmless in their budget every year. And with two payments being made in the same year, they're not sure yet how that will affect some of their beneficiaries. So they haven't brought a fiscal note forward on the bill, but there's a significant possibility that it will affect some of their people and that they will be coming in the next committee.
Right, it has another committee
to address that. The other issue is that historically there's been a calculation for the felon funds amount, which is primarily goes to the Department of Corrections. The calculation for the felon funds at the original at the 1,022 dividend amount, which goes to the FY18 budget, was $12.4 million. And with this larger amount, that calculation would have been $25 million. The bill as written doesn't address that. It's a supplemental dividend, but that's something that the next committee may want to address, whether or not to adjust the budget for that amount, which will also adjust the amount of the dividend and bring it closer to the $1,030 that's suggested in our fiscal note. But those are two issues that I thought should be known by the committee before they pass the bill out.
Question? Ready for questions?
Yeah, sure.
Sure. These are the only things you can think of that other than the health and social services that needs to think through what ramifications there may be for their division, their department?
Well, Mr. Chair, clearly this bill, the appropriation is contrary to the governor's fiscal plan, and so everyone needs to think about whether that money is needed for other purposes. So that's a separate issue.
Yeah.
But other than that, as a matter of administering this program and getting, if this money were available, I think those are the issues that you need to be considering.
Okay, because that's what I'm trying to find out. As this bill moves to the next committee, will things be dribbling or dripping out, or will there be a, here are a couple of the concerns and fiscal notes, and they'll all be there, so it's not unintentionally delayed?
Yeah, sure. Mr. Chair, I don't believe that anyone's intending to delay it. I think the original review by the Department of Health and Social Services, the size of the dividend doesn't matter to them, but they hadn't considered the timing of the dividend and how that will affect some of the people in their programs, and so they may come to you and they may not.
Okay. And we'll be going to finance as the next committee referral. Senator Cockhill.
One of the things that the department gets to do that is one of the worst tasks is garnishment. So garnishment has happened probably on first round. So if this actually goes into the second round, do you anticipate that would also be a part of the cost?
Through the chair to Senator Coghill, yes, that will be something. And one of the things in the fiscal in our fiscal note was 48 hours of programming time, which would be contracting for, because we will have to do garnishments. It will be a very complicated and unpleasant task for some people. But yes, the garnishments will come out of this exactly the same as they would have out of the other. But now you've moved forward and you're going to have to do it over.
So it's mostly, Mr. Chairman, it's mostly administrative costs at this point.
Yeah.
And I need to just put on the record that Senator Coghill has been with us for some time. I inadvertently neglected to mention that for the record. Are there any additional questions for Mr. Burnett? I do have one. You mentioned that this is contrary to the governor's fiscal plan. Is that still true to this day that it's contrary to the plan? Do we know that? Has he changed his mind on the people of Alaska getting the other half of their dividend, or is it from your perspective, is it still the case?
Not wanting to speak for the governor and how his mind, the budget documents that are before the legislature are consistent with not paying this dividend. So
I see. Okay.
So that's all our official documents.
Okay. Okay, and just for the record, I just want the record to show that there was a majority of vote in each house for the actual appropriation in our budget document last year that went to the governor. And what occurred was the governor, under his right to do so, vetoed this portion of the dividend. And this is an attempt to restore that portion of the dividend that was in the appropriation that the majority of each body voted on. So with that, are there any additional questions for Mr. Burnett? And also we have Ms. Martin online if there's any questions for her. Senator Coghill?
Maybe only on the contingency language. I have not seen any legal precedent or lack of it on contingency, but my guess is that works fine. And maybe just a couple of words on the contingency, because we're passing one bill contingent upon another.
Right.
And I would just like, I haven't heard the explanation, so it might have been that I missed it the first go around. And is that the case?
Yes. In record? Yes, and I can bring up our staff to do a review with that as well, if that would help.
If it's on the record, I can go check it out, if it's already something you've done.
We did when we introduced the bill.
Okay. My apologies for this.
But we have staff here.
Let's just take this one more pass by it.
Please, Mr. Taco, and thank you, Mr. Burnett. Mr. Taco, could you please just briefly explain both bills and in the enabling bill, SB2, as well?
For the record, my name is Gina Rotaco, staff to Senator Dunleavy. So SB1 is the appropriation bill, and that appropriates $683,234,813 for about $1,030 per dividend for 2016. SB2 is the directive. It directs the Department of Revenue to issue the check immediately, and it has an effective date of May 1st, 2017 for both bills to pass. And the point of this is that to try to use fiscal year 18 funds, same fiscal year funds as the 2016 dividend was paid out. Otherwise, there's some financial and legal questions that may come up if we blow past January or June 30th deadline. So it also has SB2 also has a section in there that if SB1 fails, SB2 doesn't go into law. So both bills have to pass.
Yeah, and that was just a legal question I was wondering. But I think we do this in appropriation bills regularly. I wanted to know if there was any new wrinkles in this particular approach. So evidently not.
Do you wish to have Ms. Martin testify to that?
Not necessarily. I can go okay. back and wander through it. We've seen it in our budget bills many, many times, so I was just wondering if there's anything new wrinkle in this. But I haven't seen anything, so.
Through the chair, if I may. So SB2, because it directs the department to pay immediately, if it didn't do that, for the appropriation would go in with the next year's dividend, 2017's dividend, rather than a supplemental. And so what would happen is that it would actually adjust the 2017 amount, and people who may not be eligible in 2016 would get a portion of 2016's dividend in 2017. So that's why it's separate this way.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Any additional questions for Mr. Taco? And again, this bill, if moved today, would go on to another committee of referral, which is finance, for further discussion. And information. So with that, is there a motion to move SB 2?
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 2, version 30, LS0044 Alpha, from this committee to the next with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Thank you. And seeing no objection, SB 2 moves from this committee to the next committee referral, which is Finance. And we will take a quick at ease and sign the documents, and we'll come back online and gavel up. We're back in session. So with that, next meeting, which is Thursday, February 2nd at 3:30, we're going to have Dr. Ralph Townsend back from ICER, so we can ask Dr. Townsend more details on the fiscal, the economic situation of Alaska as ICER and his research show us. We have an opportunity to talk to him more in depth about how the PFD impacts the economy, how various taxes impact the economy, how reductions would impact the economy or a combination thereof. Try and give us as much information as possible as we go through this issue of trying to solve our fiscal dilemma that we have. Are there any questions or comments before we adjourn for the day? Oh, and we will be hearing SB 21 will be introduced, Permanent Fund Income POMV Dividends by Senator Stedman. This is a bill from Senator Stedman. Any questions or comments before we close? Seeing none, meeting's adjourned.